Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
At Alma, we know the connection between you and your therapist matters. But if you're already feeling stressed and burnt out, the idea of trying to find a therapist you really connect with can be overwhelming. That's why Alma's focused on helping you find the right therapist for you. When you browse their online directory, you can filter by the qualities that are most important to you. Then, book free 15-minute consultations with any therapist you're interested in seeing. And because 95% of therapists at Alma accept insurance, you can find care that's affordable too. You want to talk to someone, but not just anyone. Alma is there to help you find the right fit. Visit helloalma.com/therapy30 to schedule a free consultation today. That's helloalma.com/therapy30.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pot of thunder and rock and roll, and the only place to hear the patented Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Chris Jericho. Hey, listen, a couple of my friends were talking yesterday. One friend said to the other friend, hey, I bumped into your wife yesterday. And the other guy said, oh, yeah, where? He goes, you know that cafe opposite the Swingers Club? The other guy goes, yeah. I met her opposite that. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
All right. I didn't get that one when I heard it, so I listened to it again. I still didn't get it. I listened actually to it three times, and then I had to text Duff for an explanation. I said, you got to help me with this, and I'm going to read you exactly what he said. If the cafe is opposite the Swingers Club and you meet opposite the cafe, where would that put you? At the Swingers Club. He saw his buddy's wife at the Swingers Club but was trying to be nice. You know my rule here. If you have to explain the joke, then it really wasn't much of a joke to begin with. But Duff McKagan still delivers every single week, even while on the road with Guns N' Roses. They have a few more dates left in the States, a couple in Mexico, then they're headed down under to Australia and New Zealand in November. I don't know if Duff's going to be able to call in jokes of the week when he's down under. We'll see what his commitment is here to Talk is Jericho. But they will be rocking, and Fozzy's rocking too, on the Save the World Tour. The tour has been amazing so far. We'll be in Louisville, Kentucky with Louder Than Life this Sunday, September 26th, with Judas Priest and Metallica, and then Indianapolis at the Hi-Fi on Monday the 27th, Tuesday the 28th in Harrison, Ohio at the Blue Note, Thursday the 30th, Nashville at Basement East, and then Friday in Canton at the Action Building. More dates included, FozzyRock.com. Tickets are getting close to selling out. VIPs, most of them are sold out. But go to Fozzy Rock and find out what is left and come check us out if you can. And then we are headed to Europe starting November 29th, Liverpool. And we've got Newcastle and Bournemouth and Chester. London will be sold out. Glasgow will be sold out. Newcastle is already sold out. Swansea is sold out. Manchester is sold out. Once again, FozzyRock.com for all ticket and VIP information. And after a couple of delays and reschedules, finally setting sail on October 21st, Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea, the triple whammy. We are back, baby. It's been a long time coming, but we're here at last. We just announced yesterday a couple last additions to the lineup: Wardlow, Rebel, Chaos Project, Ashley Dambois, Aubrey Edwards is going to be there, reffing up a storm, and of course, Kurt Angle, Will Ospreay, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Rock and Roll Express, Bully Ray, Dean Malenko, Orange Cassidy, Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, Jamie Hayter, Lance Archer, Jake Roberts, Chris Statlander, The Gun Club, Colt Cabana, Will Hobbs, Ricky Starks, Chris Daniels, Sean Spears, Frankie Kazarian, Marco Stunt, so many more. Go check that out at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. Brad Williams is the guest host along with Bully Ray. Medusa is the guest cruise director. Striper, Quarantine, Rubik's Cube, The Secret Saints, Fozzy, of course, Crobot, Paradise Kitty, Dave Spivak Project, all bringing the rock and roll. We've got Bruce Jingles. We've got Ryan Niemiller. We've got unprofessional wrestling. We've got Ryan Nemeth doing some comedy. It's going to be insane. So if you want to go on the vacation of a lifetime, there's still time to get your cabins. ChrisJerichoCruise.com. Go check that out. And trust me, if three is half as good as two, it's going to be one of the best times ever. And it's going to be even better than two because we're back out on the water, baby. All right. Speaking of baby, Adam Cole's All Elite, baby. You hear how it all came together just a couple days before his debut at AEW All Out. It's a great story. And his decision, he really had to think about sign with AEW or sign again with WWE. Adam talks about his 4 years with NXT, including the Undisputed Era, some of his favorite feuds and matches, and all that he learned from Shawn Michaels. He talks about his relationship with Vince McMahon and Triple H and what ultimately tipped the scales in favor of him signing with AEW. He's also sharing the story behind his name, what inspired the Adam Cole Bay Bay catchphrase, the mad scramble to get his gear in time for the AEW debut. So many great stories. Adam Cole is here now on Talk is Jericho. Well, tell us what happened last week.
Yeah. Well, last week, there was a bunch of different stuff that went down. You know, between the biggest issue, by far, being the fact that my gear was massively delayed. So what had happened was it was supposed to get there at 10:30. Supposed to arrive at the hotel. And for some reason, the hotel actually denied the gear. So I'm freaking out. Fortunately, I had old stuff, but I didn't want to make my AEW debut with old gear that I had. So we ended up calling the truck, or someone ended up calling the truck, and they said, yeah, it'll be here at 2 o'clock.
This is like the FedEx truck or whatever.
Yes, yeah. And I'm already stressing because we had actually just talked about this. I like to be on time.
What kind of a wrestler are you? You're always on time. Right. Jeez Louise.
So we're there at 2, and then they tell us it's not on the truck. So I'm like, okay, you know, screw it. We just got to get to the building. And me and Britt get into our Uber, and we start driving. And Britt, thank God, she checks her phone, and she goes, oh, my God, it just arrived. So we had the Uber stop, and she ran in. And the best part was Britt said, hey, this package that we've been waiting for that you guys denied, it's here. So can someone go get it? And the lady said, yeah, you're going to have to wait about 3 hours until someone can go downstairs and get it.
Oh, my gosh.
And fortunately, Britt is a little feisty, so she got it done. She got it done, but... My God, yeah, between that and then, you know, there are different interviews and stuff backstage, it was very, very busy.
But let me just say this, the reason why this new gear was so important, you had to have it.
Yes.
Because it's, you couldn't wear your old gear because it's NXT related, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I do think I could have maybe gotten away with it, but to me, that gear was synonymous with, you know, my time there in NXT.
Sure.
And I wanted a new, fresh thing. You know how important that is. So I would have been really heartbroken if I didn't have my new gear for that night. But fortunately, it worked out.
Well, and that's the thing. I've always been a big proponent for when you switch from heel to babyface or vice versa, or especially when you switch companies, there has to be a difference. It can't be the same look or the same vibe. Because it's not the same. It's different.
Absolutely.
It's updated.
Yeah. That's why I was really adamant about... I wore a leather jacket for a very brief time with Ring of Honor in New Japan. And I never wore one when I was at NXT. So I kind of wanted to go back to that look, but make it a little bit different in that way. So like the other jacket I had was kind of bare bones basic. And this one is a little bit busier with a lot more stuff on it. Mm. So yeah, definitely wanted to have a new look for such a big night.
So... Talking about coming to AEW, and you've been here a very short time, a few weeks. Were you expecting to get this type of reaction from the fan base itself, like when you first appeared and all the buzz that's been surrounding you since you came to AEW?
Not at all. I mean, I did expect some people to be excited because they know about my history with, you know, the Young Bucks and Kenny, and I'm still friends with those guys to this day. It was my entire time in NXT. And I had heard rumblings about people being really excited, but... But my debut at All Out was my favorite night of my wrestling career, just for the reaction. Uh-huh. Like, it was so insane, so, so cool. It's so funny. Anytime I'm in a situation where I debut, it was the same at NXT where I surprise debuted there. I'm like, God, I hope people care. And then with All Out, it was that tenfold because everyone was expecting Brian. Mm. So I'm like, oh, I hope they're not like, oh, crap. We got Adam Cole instead. So, but between that and then my debut against Frankie Kazarian, just the reactions have been unbelievable. It's like, I don't know. I definitely get this feeling that they're genuinely so happy I'm here. And they can tell I'm really happy I'm here too. So it's a really cool thing, right?
Yeah,
now.
You haven't stopped smiling since you have been here.
I can't help it.
All throughout. Does it surprise you how well you fit in here and how much you're enjoying it, or did you think there'd be a little bit more of a feeling out process? Or
so I was pretty certain. That was one thing I was pretty confident with. Between getting to meet, you know, everybody here before I'd come here.
You've been a few times. Yeah,
and just again, the camaraderie and the vibe here is so positive. Tony Khan is just contagious when it comes to his passion about wrestling. So I had a good feeling that I was going to fit in well, and fortunately, I think I have so far.
Because it's a reunion, like you said. Like I wasn't familiar with all of the backstory with you and the Bucks and all that sort of stuff. Because I think when I first started working with them was Japan in 2018, beginning of that time frame, end of 2017, you'd already gone to NXT.
Right.
And I think they were still doing the story where you were a ghost or you were dead. And I think they got me to say something about, you killed Adam Cole or something along those lines. That was, I think, something that I totally forgot about. But yeah, you were the ghost on BTE.
Right. Yeah, they... God, I love Matt and Nick so much. My entire time there, every so often, whether it be every few months or whatever, they constantly would make references to me, whether that be through Brit or whether that be the ghost thing. And that is just because we formed such a good relationship. I've known those guys now for over 10 years. So the fact that they decided on their own to kind of keep my character alive... was pretty cool.
And tell us what happened on BTE. Why are you a ghost, or why were you a ghost?
Yes. So this was the beautiful thing about BTE is, again, we can creatively tell kind of whatever stories we want to, as goofy as they might be. But I was getting ready to go to NXT. I'd already been kicked out of the Bullet Club, but they needed to find a way to write me off of being the Elite. So the idea was that Kenny Omega was in charge of poisoning a Monster energy drink. And my final scene... was me laying on the ground with my tongue out, and it said Adam Cole's character on Being the Elite dead, and then with the year I was born until
gotcha.
Yeah.
So then you were just a ghost at that point in time.
Right.
So were you in one of the original lineups of the Bullet Club?
Actually, I didn't come in until much later.
Is this through Ring of Honor or through New Japan?
Through Ring of Honor. Okay. That's how it started. So again, I owe the Young Bucks a lot for a lot of things they've done for me in my career, and one of those things was the Bullet Club. They had gone to Gato and said, hey, we think Adam Cole would be a perfect fit, especially with Bullet Club USA over in Ring of Honor. He went for it. So then I had more eyes on me from New Japan at that point, getting to work with Jushin Liger. He really enjoyed the match. So then I got the chance to go over and do some tours. So predominantly, I worked as a Bullet Club member within Ring of Honor. But I still did have the chance. I'd say I did about 8 tours of New Japan in Bullet Club.
Did you get the New Japan gig because you were in the Bullet Club USA, or you were already working in New Japan?
So I had done one New Japan show prior to that. And then there was kind of a long, I think like a year period where I didn't go back. And then once I did join Bullet Club, then there were multiple tours I was going on because of that.
So you always had that relationship with those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in NXT.
Yeah.
When you first started hearing about the rumors of AEW, what did you guys think? Like, what was your thoughts of like, oh, sure, another guy is going to try and start a company? Were you all for it? Were you kind of a little hesitant? What did you think?
I was so excited. Because, again, because of my relationship with Matt and Nick, I knew how serious this was going to be. I knew between the roster that started coming out with that big press conference and you're there and Pac is there and the Bucks and Kenny, I'm like, this is going to be really special. And you could feel, again, the energy and the vibe, not just in person when the fans were there, but, you know, in this day and age with social media, it is really important. And the social media buzz around AEW was so strong, so, so strong. And then when the first, you know, couple shows started happening, I'm like, this is great. It was like a real true alternative that was just knocking it out of the park every time. So I was actually, even before the first few shows, I was very confident it was going to do well. I don't know if anyone expected it to blow up in the way that it has. It's just like, it's so cool to watch and it's so, so awesome. And now that we're here, I'm excited to see where AEW is even going to be like a year from now or 2 years from now.
Let's talk about your journey, because obviously you have a huge history in NXT that I want to discuss as well. But you came here. I know that they obviously wanted to keep you, and you had kind of some mixed feelings about leaving, all these sort of things. what kind of started your mindset even to thinking that maybe I should give AW a try, and then what finally made you come here?
Yeah. So naturally, I've always been curious or excited at the idea of working for AEW.
Right.
Between the roster, the fans really are, I don't mean to sound cliche, but the fans are the best fans in the world. Just when you watch the shows, you can tell too. So I think about all these different cool matches I could have, how much I get along with everybody. So I was always interested there. But then when it came time to make the decision, which again kind of fell into my lap, I was expecting to have this conversation in December. But all of a sudden,
everyone thought that your contract ended in December, including you?
Including me.
So how did nobody know that it really ended in June or whatever it was?
Right. So and here's the strangest part. So, you know, me and another guy who I won't name just in case, but we signed extensions virtually at the same time. And his was up in December, and so I thought mine was as well, but it was a totally different case where it was another contract where it ended earlier. Like, I don't understand how that works, but I was surprised, very surprised.
How did you end up finding out that your contract was over? And
so they talked to me a few days prior to my contract expiring. Like, literally it was like 4 days until my deal was up, and they asked me if I'd be interested in signing an extension, which to me, it was a no-brainer because I was in the middle of a feud with Kyle O'Reilly, who's right. one of my best friends. So I'm like, cool, yeah, at the very least, I'll do this and finish that, you know, with him. So yeah, just crazy. But as far as actually deciding where I wanted to go, it's kind of a really boring story, but it was like 1 a.m, and Britt's asleep, and I'm laying there in the dark just thinking like pros and cons of WWE, AEW. And when I started thinking about going to AEW, I felt like a 9-year-old kid. Like, I had butterflies in my stomach, and I was so excited, so jazzed up. And I'm like, I'm 32. This is, if this isn't the world or my heart or my soul telling me that's what I'm supposed to do, that's what I'm supposed to do. So, yeah, it was me by myself, no music, no movie, no nothing, in the dark, everyone's asleep. And I was like, I have to go to AEW.
You literally followed your gut.
Yeah.
You followed your heart.
Yeah.
Right. Was it hard to tell? Because the idea, and we can talk about this, is that they were going to give you, finally bring you up to the main roster. I mean,
yes.
Is that what they were telling you? Kind of, because you had been in NXT for 4 years.
4 years, yeah.
And never once really gone to the main roster.
Right.
So now that your deal is up, were you saying to them, you got to bring me up? Were they going to just do it anyways? Kind of talk about those conversations.
Yeah. No, so that was the pitch from the gate, where I did have a meeting with Vince. That went really well. It was like a 30-minute combo, which was cool.
Is that the first time you ever had a real long conversation with him?
I've only talked to him for maybe like 2 or 3 minutes prior to that. It was after I got to work the Survivor Series event, and he wanted to talk to us afterwards. He was really happy with the match. So, but no real conversation with him before. So that was the first time, and it was really cool. Again, he was very complimentary, very nice. But yeah, the idea was for me to go to Raw or SmackDown and not stay within NXT. Just because, I mean, again, I had been there for so long, and I think they knew, as much as I do love NXT, I was ready to, you know, if I stayed in WWE, to take that step of going.
Yeah, you'd done everything you could do in NXT tenfold at that point.
Right, exactly. So, but yeah, that was kind of the gist of the conversation. So it was definitely to move me up to Raw or SmackDown.
And was there any plans discussed about what you would do on Raw or SmackDown?
Yeah, so it was funny, is there was like, apparently there were a lot of ideas, but they were very vague on what exactly they wanted to do. Like, I mean, there was discussion again. Well, this is interesting too, because I remember when I first had the conversation, they had mentioned something about, you know, maybe we'll do a name change, or maybe we'll change your look a little bit. So that scared me a little bit, just because I'd spent nearly 14 years, as Adam Cole. And then our latest conversation, they were definitely more open to me being me and being myself and stuff like that. But yeah, they could tell I was not too thrilled about the idea.
Did you kind of see that as a red flag in a way?
Yeah.
The fact, I mean, like you said, well, maybe we'll change your name and your look. And it's like, you pretty much know, like you said, my name value is been made even huge to a certain degree. And you look the way you look as the star that you are.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So did you see that as kind of like a warning maybe in a way? Or?
Yeah, it was definitely something that made me a little bit more timid about maybe pulling the trigger on that one. And again, you know, of course, they could not have been nicer. But when I think about me and my career and what is best for me, the idea of that being an option did scare me a little bit, mm-hmm. where I was like, okay, so, you know, what if I do go and then something happens anyway? Because at that point, I can't really say or do anything. So, yeah, it was absolutely, red flag is the perfect way to put it.
There's another thing that came out, so that you might have been used as Keith Lee's manager,
right?
Something along those lines. Like, whenever I hear those types of things, you know, like where there's smoke, there's fire, somebody must be suggesting it. Well, let's just put him as a manager. And it's like, you don't have to say anything, but I will. Yeah. Sometimes they get certain ideas in their head, and it's like, you're not seeing the draw of this guy, you know, and you don't have to change a thing except for change the show that he's on, and the rest will fall into place.
Right, right. Exactly. Yeah. God, so many times, like you said, you don't even necessarily have to change a thing, but if you change the atmosphere that they're in and the people that they're working with, then it feels fresh.
And
then
people would be excited. Fun. Adam Cole is here, former NXT champion. Oh my gosh, make it a big deal. Yay!
Right.
Right.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, again, I understand where they're coming from to some extent, but I feel like a big part of what has made me work is, you know, I'm not 6'3", and I'm not, you know, 285 pounds. So, like, the Adam Cole Bebe and the Boom and all that stuff is such a big part of what I do and how I connect with the audience, aside from the wrestling and the promos and stuff like that. So I feel like it would have been quite the challenge if that would have happened, as far as the name change goes and stuff like that, to kind of, you know, build myself back up.
And that's the thing, like your size, like you mentioned, not being the biggest guy, it's only an issue when it's brought up. Other than that, no one even notices, cares, whatever.
Exactly.
You have the same mindset that I had when I first started. I might not be the biggest guy, but I'll have the biggest personality and connect with the fans the most. And that's what wrestling is all about.
Right.
If you make it something, then it'll be something. If you don't even worry about it, like you have been done such a great job either way, that's kind of another WWE type thing.
Right.
Which is leads me to another thing I want to ask you about. And then we'll go into some of the great stuff that you did at NXT, because I want to talk about that too.
Sure.
But the way that NXT has been rebranded over the last few weeks of NXT 2.0, and it's been a complete change as to what NXT is. Why do you think this rebranding has happened? And do you think it has something to do with the fact that AEW, quote unquote, beat NXT in the Wednesday Wars?
Right, right. So again, this is all me guessing.
Yeah, sure. Because, we're discussing it.
I think for sure that played a part in it. Absolutely. And then I also understand the thought process of, because there were so many guys in NXT who were presented a certain way, and then they would go to Raw or SmackDown, and it was a complete 180.
Big time.
Total change. So I also see the standpoint, if I am Vince McMahon and him looking at NXT as this breeding ground for guys on Raw or SmackDown, that he kind of wants his hands in it a little bit more, and he wants, you know, bigger guys and stuff like that. Not saying that everyone's going to be big, but, you know, more guys who are geared to be ready to go for Raw and SmackDown. So I understand that, because when I was there at NXT, it was treated as a third brand.
Yeah.
It was, you know, we had, again, we got on television because of it. We had that big month, Survivor Series month, which was really cool. And it was the more athletic, you know, pro wrestling storytelling, pro wrestling style. So, I think them going back to this, certainly AEW has to play a factor. In my mind, it just has to. But I do think even more importantly, it's to make sure that they don't have to change a thing about guys when they're in NXT now. At least that's what it seems like to me.
What I think it is, and once again, you know, I can say this just from observing,
sure,
is that NXT was put on Wednesday nights. Obviously, that's to combat AEW. And we'll wipe out this pissant little company right away. Problem is, they had no idea what they were dealing with. It really backfired on them, to where NXT, remember how cool, of course, I don't have to tell you, NXT was so cool.
Yeah.
You guys would go do your pay-per-view weekend shows and get three times the reaction in a sold-out arena than the pay-per-view would get.
Right.
So then when they put NXT up against AEW, it really hurt the brand, to where you lost the cool factor.
Yeah.
And AEW was the cool one. NXT just got steamrolled on that. And I think as a result, Vince kind of holds a grudge against NXT. You had the chance to beat AEW and you didn't. Now I'm going to take over and I'm going to do it my way.
Yeah.
Do you feel that at all?
I think that's definitely a possibility, is what it could be. Because like you had mentioned too about NXT being, I mean, at one phase, prior to AEW, NXT really did feel like the cool
brand.
Cool, like you said, it would be, we would do a takeover and it'd be, again, sold out, like 14,000, 13,000 people with just a crowd just rocking just all night. It reminds me a ton of how AEW is.
Everybody's over at the time. Yeah.
Everyone. They're just there for, every single match, every single false finish. And then, stuff kind of changed, obviously, when AEW arrived and AEW became the true alternative and things like that. So, yeah, again, I think without question, the changes within NXT or the changes in general within WWE, AEW has to play a factor to some extent. Yeah.
You mentioned NXT being the place to be. Yeah. It's interesting because I remember going to Japan and working with Finn Balor.
Yeah.
And with the next year is with Shinsuke Nakamura. Mm. And they were both in NXT at the time. And both times I came back to the States, we went right to Raw, and I had a meeting with Vince. I'm like, dude, get this Finn Balor here.
Yeah.
The next year, get this Nakamura here. He's like, does he speak English? I'm like, yes, he speaks English. And he's like, Freddie Mercury and Michael Jackson, his personality is amazing. Such a star. Why are you, and once again, I'm working in the WWE main roster. So this is not a cut down to anybody, but why do you have these guys? Because at the time, kind of in the lower league, minor league, third division sort of thing, bring them up here. But a lot of guys didn't want to come up here because they were happy being there and doing all the stuff that you guys were doing, you said.
Right, right. Because that is so true. Because at the end of the day, I got into this, and I know you did too, I'm sure. It's just, it's such a great time. You just want to have fun. Mm. And my God, getting the chance at NXT to go out there and go, yeah, you guys got 30 minutes, go nuts, in front of a really, really rocking crowd.
Yeah.
That feeling afterwards was the best. And I will say this too, because another really cool thing, aside from the fans being so great, was the locker room, the producers, everyone got along so well. Because I had heard horror stories before about the certain things that can go down in locker rooms at Raw and SmackDown, more so years and years ago.
Yeah.
But in NXT, that never existed. Like, everyone got along. Everyone would be waiting for the other person to come through and go, oh man, you killed it. We're going to try to top that. And it was just such a cool, it was all, I really did. The 4 years I was there, I had a blast. And I understand why people didn't want to leave. It was really special.
Because you guys, they kind of took care of you guys as far as traveling together, like on buses and that sort of thing as well, right?
Right, right. Yeah, we would, they took care of the hotels. We would all get on a bus. Those were other really fun trips, is we would do television on Wednesday. And then we'd fly out the next morning and we would do house shows on the road Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday to pretty packed audiences, which was really, really fun.
Because you were starting to do television around the country, right? It wasn't just based in Florida, or
no,
was it mostly based in Florida?
Actually, we always did television in Florida at Full Sail.
Gotcha.
Actually, yeah, yeah.
But so the house shows would be spread around?
Yeah,
live events?
We got to travel a lot on the road then. And those were always, God, they were the most fun. Because again, it's fans who only get to see you, once a year for NXT anyway. Because we didn't travel near as much as Raw and SmackDown did. But when we did, they took great care of us. Again, the whole crew on the bus. It was great times.
Being in Japan or something like that, right?
Yeah. Right, right.
Because normally people have to travel on their own. They have to rent a car. And another thing that we don't have to worry here in AEW, which is tremendous. I never want to rent another fucking rent a car ever again.
Right.
How was it for you guys when you mentioned it kind of in passing, but I'm trying to honestly think of a guy who was really big in NXT that came to WWE and had that same sort of success. And I really can't. Even a guy like Samoa Joe never really reached the full potential that I thought, which was WWE champion. I thought he had it written all over him.
Oh, yeah.
And then you look at Finn. I know Finn won the title briefly, then he got hurt, but same thing with him. He just became a guy. And you look at Keith Lee now and Karrion Kross. It's just, there's nothing happening for these guys. How was it for you as kind of one of the NXT locker room leaders, I'm assuming, because you were there so long and doing such a great job? Was it hard to kind of see your guys go and how do you fuck up Ricochet, for example, right? And it's just nothing there.
Right, right. So for me, a big thing for me, because a lot of these guys would still come around and hang out and stuff too.
Yeah.
And to me, it came down to if they were happy or not. So there were some guys who, they would go up and maybe they didn't do exactly what they did in NXT, but they were, you know, making more money and they were having a great time and all that stuff. So at that point, if you're happy, then I'm happy
right.
for you. But yeah, but for people who had a run in NXT and then stuff completely changed on Raw or SmackDown and they were bummed about it, of course that bummed me out for them. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, over time, they've learned to adapt. Over time, they've learned that maybe, you know, it might start out this way, but then eventually stuff will change for me. And I hope that's the case for a lot of those guys. Mm-hmm. I hope that, you know, Raw and SmackDown is going to turn into everything they ever wanted. So only time will tell, though.
Let's talk about the Undisputed Era and some of the great classics things that you guys did. Was obviously, it was you and Kyle and Bobby Fish and
Roderick Strong.
Roderick.
Yeah.
And you guys all knew each other from Ring of Honor years. So did you all come into NXT together or within around the same time frame?
So this is crazy. Before I go into this, this is the first time since 2009 that I've not been in the same company as Kyle O'Reilly.
Really?
That's how long I've worked with.
From where?
Dragon Gate USA is where we started, where we had our first like internet breakout match, and then we both got signed to Ring of Honor at the exact same time. But they had no clue what they wanted to do with us.
Right.
Like, no. So they go, just throw them together as a tag team.
Oh, yeah.
And then we teamed for a while and feuded all that stuff. But
what was your name as a team, the two of you guys?
Future Shock.
That's right.
Was the name. Yeah, yeah.
Future Shock, yeah.
So when it came time to, you know, I knew I was going to finish up at Ring of Honor and Kyle had finished up a couple months prior. Yeah, they came to us, actually, and said, hey, we're going to put you, Kyle O'Reilly, and Bobby Fish together as a group. And I called Kyle. I'm like, can you believe this? Like, it's just constantly together,
right.
Like, which I was stoked about. So me, Kyle, and Bobby all debuted the same night. And then I'd say about 6 months later, we added Roderick Strong to the group. And we had all talked, too, and we're like, of anybody to join the group with us, he is the perfect fit. And I really felt like that's when the Undisputed Era kind of came into its own, when it was all four of us. And it was so easy, because we all four are still really close friends. Like, I talk to those guys every single day. So I think that translated on television, because you could tell we were having fun and you know, enjoying working together. But I had the time of my life with those guys. Just, again, unbelievable talents, even better friends. It was a blast. It was really cool.
There's nothing better than working with your friends,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Did you ever turn on each other and work against each other as well?
Yeah. So the tail end of my NXT run, I turned on Kyle O'Reilly and Roderick Strong. Bobby Fish was injured at the time. But yeah, actually, my final feud and you know, my final amount of matches in NXT were with Kyle O'Reilly. So it was very poetic. It was like the perfect way to end my run there.
Bobby Fish is one of my favorite names ever.
Right.
I love the fact his last name is Fish. I think I met him in Tokyo at a hotel when we were over there with WWE, and I had this like, dude, you have the best name ever.
Right.
It is. You know, it's interesting because when we had our Blood and Guts War Games match, I watched your War Games match.
Cool.
Just to try and get some ideas of a modern day version. You know, you can watch the ones from the 80s, which is one mindset.
Yeah.
Then I watched your guys' version. Great job, great match.
Thanks.
Was it cool for you guys to be involved in that? Kind of tell us a little bit about the whole bringing back War Games for NXT.
Yeah.
Because they originally, just so you know, a little tidbit, Elimination Chamber was originally going to be War Games. But Vince didn't want to do War Games because he said it was too WCW.
Oh.
So then we created our own. Hunter always wanted to do the War Games, and then he brings it to NXT, and there you go. So kind of tell us how that all came about and
so
how you did it.
That was so awesome because I actually just arrived in NXT. So my first appearance there was at a TakeOver. The next TakeOver was the first War Games. So it was thrown right into the fire there. But man, I was so pumped. Again, I was such a fan of those matches and watching those matches. And then thinking about, you know, the way to exactly what you said, how to modernize it in some ways was really interesting. And I liked that so far in NXT, I've been, and the Undisputed Era has been in every single War Games match. So it's been cool and challenging to make it, you know, a little bit different
every time.
But there is this, I don't know. And I felt this way every single time where, like, right before the match starts, the sirens go off and, you know, the cage is lowering and getting set up. And just the buzz in the arena was always a little bit different. Like, they were like, oh, we're going to see some violence.
Yeah.
I am terrified of heights. So the fact that I've somehow ended up getting thrown off the top every single one It was a little disheartening.
You guys just had one recently, like over the last year or so,
oh,
right?
Oh, yes. I did not go off the top of that one.
Well, there was a finish that you took off something that I saw through a table with a thing. It was crazy.
Oh, that was the one 2 years ago. I think the one you're thinking of is Tommaso Ciampa had given me an air raid crash.
That's the one.
Off the top. And then funny enough, less than 24 hours later, I wrestled Pete Dunne at Survivor Series for the NXT title. So that was just a crazy week. Crazy. I had done Raw, NXT, and SmackDown that week. It was awesome. But yeah, well, real quick about the heights thing. So I always made myself climb up to the top of it before the show. And Chris, everyone would laugh at me because I physically would shake. My legs would shake. But then when you're out there and you're doing it, then I was fine and it was okay. But,
you just got to go for it at that point.
Just got to
right?
go for it. Just got to go
how,
for it.
How involved was Hunter in those matches? Like you mentioned the producers. Like who were the producers at NXT?
Yeah. So Shawn Michaels worked with me a ton from start.
Now, Shawn came in a couple years after you'd been there, right? Or was he there the whole time?
He was actually there the whole time.
Gotcha.
I think he had actually just come in maybe the year prior before I got there. So he's always been hands-on with helping me or just listening. Sean's really, really great about kind of letting you come up with what you want to come up with. And, you know, as you run it by him, he'll randomly just throw in this little thing that's like brilliant. And yeah. you're like, oh, my God, yeah, that's yeah. so much better. So yeah. he's
that's
the
what
best.
He does.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Hunter was great as well, as far as, you know, wanting certain ideas or approaches to things. But producer wise, it was mostly Sean or Terry Taylor was there a lot and Matt Bloom as well. But I've gotten to work with. You know, Steve Corino, Scotty Tuhati, Norman, you know, all those guys. Yeah.
Basically, the guys that are at the Performance Center yes. kind of helping in as well.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit more about Sean. I mean, it seems I can see that he would take a liking. You guys physically look very similar. Yeah. Obviously, he knows kind of coming to the business as a smaller guy, quote unquote. So tell me some of the advice that he gave you and how he helped you out over the years.
Well, again, and I won't because I know I've beaten this to death at this point, but like... One of the highlights, maybe the highlight of the 4 years I was there was building a relationship with him. Like we still talk to this day.
That's cool. Yeah.
He's been so giving and incredibly insightful on so many different things. But I'd say the biggest one that he taught me was cadence and like learning how to ride the audience and get them to peak at a certain time and then when to settle down, when to speed up, when to slow down. It was all stuff. Because, you know, on the independents and stuff, we had a formula of what we would do. And if it was a double down and the crowd was up or they weren't up, we would lay there because it was supposed to be the double down. But Sean was so good at teaching me how to listen to the audience and when to go fast and when to go slow to create the most roller coaster ride possible. And it was something I didn't even think of. Mm-hmm. And I'd been wrestling for, you know, 10 years at that point. So right. It sounds like a small thing. I know that you're very aware of how important that is, but he really, really helped me understand.
You know, it's funny because I learned that, especially talking about a double down from him. We even were working some house shows. I think it was like in Chile or something like that. And he said, you know, you're going too fast on the false finishes. You got to sell a little bit longer. Don't move until I tell you. And this is like 19 years in for me or something like that, 18 years in. And I'm like, okay. And we did something and... There was a double down, and I hate counts on the double down.
Yeah.
I hate it because I feel that people are just paying attention to counting rather than
absolutely.
Building. And I just remember he's like, don't move until I tell you. And the crowd came up, and then they went down. And then they came up, and then they went down, and then they came super up. And he's like, okay, start moving. And I was like, yeah, just waiting and doing nothing was really something that I'd never really thought about. Cause to me, a false finish is you got to hit and bump and go and move and move and move. But you also have to give everybody a time to digest it.
Right.
And the more time you can do that, the better the reaction is. And a lot of people to this day in our company never do that.
Right.
And it's a real lost art. Cause you're afraid of like, what if the crowd doesn't come back? Well, the secret special advice is they always come back if you do it right.
Yeah.
So that's a Sean thing that I always remember him talking about. You know, it's like he's so right about that. I never thought about it either.
It's so true. Yeah, because I can't tell you how many scenarios I've been on, you know, takeover events with him there when he had talked about, again, laying out for a certain amount of time. And again, same thing. It would be like, that was cool. And they would cheer. And then they would kind of come down. And then it was like they registered what they just saw. They registered that we're 30 minutes in. And then, like you said, they build it, you know, even more and more and more. Mm-hmm. So it is, you're right. So important to get the most out of the stuff that you're doing.
Did you have a lot of interactions with Regal? Or is he more of just the on-camera performer at this point?
I did. I had a lot of... Regal was one of the guys who was involved in getting me hired.
Yeah, talk about that, because I know he kind of a scout, or how did he do that?
Yeah, so he was at... PWG has this really big tournament every year called the Battle of Los Angeles.
Right.
And he was there, and he had talked to me quite a bit after the match, talking about, you know, NXT and the plans and stuff like that, and just to keep an eye out and, you know, make sure my phone is on me and the email and stuff.
Right.
So clearly he definitely must have gone back and suggested to Hunter or somebody, hey, we should hire this guy. And yeah, he was there all the time. We used to talk quite a bit, whether it be just catching up about life or whatever. But yeah, he's always been incredible to me.
Let's talk about some of your classic matches in NXT. Who were some of your favorite opponents to work with?
Yeah, so Johnny Gargano is up there. We had a trilogy of matches that a lot of people still look at as like the series of the greatest, you know, NXT matches of all time, which is really cool. And the coolest thing about that is we were kind of in a tough spot too, because Johnny was in the middle of this really epic feud in NXT with Tommaso Ciampa, and they were supposed to have their final blow off at this WrestleMania weekend takeover, and Tommaso needed neck surgery. So they're scrambling for a replacement, and I hadn't even challenged for the NXT title at that point, and they go, oh, let's do Adam Cole and Gargano, we have 3 weeks to build this thing.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh great, I have to replace the blow off of the best feud in NXT history. But fortunately, the fans were great. And then we did two more matches after that. So he is so, so talented, so good. Again, a guy I've known for a long time.
He's kind of in the same position that you are in now, where he just has been there for so long.
Right.
Will he ever get the chance to go up to the main roster?
Yeah.
Especially now with the new 2.0 NXT, where does that leave Tommaso and Gargano and those guys and Kyle?
Sure. And that's the thing, too, is I hope no matter what happens – because now I know that Tommaso is the NXT champion, which is great. But I do hope, and I'm assuming this is the route they'll go, is I do think those guys are going to be fine because they are such cornerstones of the brand. And on top of that, if they really do want to help these new, young, talented guys, that you need guys like Tommaso and Gargano and O'Reilly to be there. So, but yeah. Fortunately, like I said, NXT does have guys like Tommaso, Johnny, and Kyle to be able to teach that young generation, which is vital, vital.
How was it for you, like, with Britt being here, and obviously you guys are dating together? Was it, because you never know for sure, like, even just sending a text, actually, you know, if I text somebody over there sometimes, you always kind of think, like, well, I hope they don't take this the wrong way. Was it weird for her to come to an NXT show?
So I never found it strange, and I know she didn't find it strange either. And actually, they were incredibly welcoming to her. Like, no one was ever rude to her or mean to her or anything like that. Everyone knows her too, so everyone was pumped to see her.
Right.
So it was very similar in the sense of, again, when I would come here and meet all you guys and say hello, everyone's so incredibly welcoming. And NXT was the same with her. So we are just so adamant about supporting each other that, you know, company lines and stuff like that doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
I want to be there for her, and she wants to be there for me.
There's that great moment where they film the concerned fan. It's like, it's Britt with the big close up, and they claim they didn't know it was her.
Right. So hard for me to believe.
What bump did you just take? Is that the one from the table?
That was the Ciampa? That crazy Ciampa bump off the top. And the best part was, though, is that was genuine concern on Britt's face, which was made me feel terrible. I was like, I'm fine, I promise.
How is it for you, because obviously with the pandemic and again working basically in the PC, how was that? Because it was I really noticed it for NXT.
Yeah,
because WWE did transfer to the Thunderdome, and they upgraded that. Even at WrestleMania, they had people.
Yeah.
It never gave NXT that benefit.
Yeah. So early on, wrestling in front of literally nobody, like a bunch of people had done,
right.
That was pretty brutal. You never realize, or I did, and that just really sent it home, how important the fans are, especially the NXT fans who are a little bit rowdier. So not wrestling in front of anyone was rough. However, when it did get to a point even where we had like 50 people, like 50 real fans on the floor with some screens, honest to God, I would take that over no fans at all and just screens.
Of course.
So that I was thankful for.
Yeah.
But my God, all of us really, really missed those packed takeover shows. You know, that was
the cornerstone of NXT.
Absolutely. Yeah. To me, that was what made NXT so special was those shows. So
I kind of have a feeling if those shows were still able to be put on, that it might have not affected the, you know, quote unquote wrestling war, but I think it would have benefited NXT huge to be able to focus on that, and probably would have helped the ratings and all that sort of thing too.
Oh my God, absolutely. Just strictly from perception, for NXT guys to be in big venues as well with a super hot rowdy crowd, right, automatically it's like, oh, this is really special.
You could tell, because that was one of the things when it first started, is that AEW was doing arenas with 5,000-7,000 people.
Yeah.
And you guys were doing the full sale of the PC with 200 people. It
right.
looked like freaking, you know, studio wrestling versus arena wrestling, which is what it was.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Again, when you look at the set and everything, here's an example: is my mom is, she supports me and she's not a huge wrestling fan.
Yeah.
She doesn't watch it on her own, but same thing. She had watched AEW before, and she talked about, because she doesn't know any better, she's like, AEW really looks like WWE, just because of the arena size.
Because
she's
yeah.
used to seeing me wrestle at NXT. So, yeah, again, perception-wise, even to a casual viewer, of course, AEW seemed big time, and it is.
How was that for you guys when you were told that you're going Wednesdays, you know, head-to-head with AEW and getting on national TV? Because before that, NXT was just on the WWE Network, right?
Yeah, yeah. Right, exactly. So I was stoked, and me and Britt gives me a hard time all the time, but it is really true. Like, if stuff like that is exciting, but I've always been someone who's just focused on my own thing. Like, I was like, I thought it was really cool that this idea of it going, you know, back and forth, but to me, it didn't super affect me if we had a good rating or a really bad one. I was like, okay, I just want to make my match as good as possible, or my promo as good as possible. But the idea of wrestling again being at a point where there's two shows on at the exact same time, just because of how excited the fans were. And then, of course, too, like, inside, you're like, okay, we want to try to have a better show.
Of course, yeah.
So in that sense, so it was really, really cool. It was awesome.
Because, you know, you can say it, and we were more concerned with, like you said, just our show and doing what we're doing.
Exactly.
But every day, every Thursday, you'd go check those ratings and see what it was at. And it was...
Yep.
We got into it. Was
yeah.
it the same for you?
Oh, no, it's great.
Yeah.
It's awesome. So, like, if there would be a segment or a match that we did that did a really good rating, I would be really excited and stuff like that. So, for sure. It's just cool. I've never been in my 13 and a half year career, I'd never been in a situation where it was like, oh, yeah, let's check and see how many people watched it.
Yeah.
And what do people like? What do they not like? When do they, you know, turn off or change the channel or whatever?
Right.
So it's cool to look at it that way.
Where did you start wrestling? Where did you train?
So I started wrestling in CZW. It was called Combat Zone Wrestling.
Isn't that kind of the death match
it is.
Company now? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Mox was there. And
right, yeah.
Gage. Yeah.
Yep. So I never did any death matches, but I was a student from that academy.
Where are you from?
Lancaster, Pennsylvania, so Amish country.
Home of the Chameleon Club.
Yes.
Which they've closed it now.
Yes,
it's
I know.
It's a drag. One of
so
my favorite
sad.
Venues to play. We were supposed to play it on this tour, but then it closed.
Because
you're from Lancaster, yes. Amish
and I've
country.
Been to the Chameleon Club a million times.
Yeah, great
yeah.
place.
Yeah.
So you trained there, or you trained with CZW, and that's
yes.
where you kind of started out.
Yeah, yeah. So I'd go to a ton of shows, you know, WWE shows, independent shows, Ring of Honor shows. And I went to a CZW show, and the head trainer, his name was DJ Hyde, he was out there. And I said, I built up the courage to tell him I wanted to be a wrestler someday. I said, when I graduate high school, I'm going to start training. And he goes, just look me right in the eye. And he went, why don't you want to train right now? Because I was still a senior in high school.
Yeah.
And I said, well, you know, I'm not sure if I have the money, you know, right now. And he goes, oh, no, it's in payments. Like, you don't have to pay it all up front. So
he wanted to hook you.
Yeah. And he did. The next week I started training. So I would go, you know, go to class for high school and then drive to Philadelphia, an hour 45, 2 hours, train, get the snot beat out of me, and then drive back and do it all over again. But I loved it. I loved it. So
when was your first kind of break into the scene then?
Yeah. So I'd say the biggest thing, and at the time, CZW was a more known independent, so that really helped. But funny enough, the first time I had a match that got any sort of buzz where I started getting bookings was the day that I met and wrestled Kyle O'Reilly for the first time. So we were on a Dragon Gate USA show. It was the pre-show for Gabe Sapolsky. And we had 6 minutes, and it was just go out and have this match. It was in the ECW arena, and it was one of those where the fans were really into it. First match I had where the fans were super into it, so I was all excited. But yeah, that was my first real break where then, you know, I started doing pre-show matches for Ring of Honor and stuff, which I don't know if I've told this story, but I actually did pre-show matches for Ring of Honor for like a year and a half. And I would go
non-televised.
Yeah. And I would go and I would do the match and I would get to the back and Adam Pearce was there and Kerry Silken. And they would say, yeah, great job. You know, keep it up. And it happened for like a year and a half. I'm like, I need to try something. So I sent Adam Pearce a promo and he said, hey, we want to book you for before the show, but we want you to cut a promo instead. So then I went out and cut a promo and Jim Cornette was there. And Jim Cornette really liked it. And that ended up getting me a contract in Ring of Honor. So it wasn't even a match. It was
talking about before, right?
Yeah, right.
How did you get the name Adam Cole?
So I was going to be named Cole by my parents up until like 2 days before. Then they decided to change it to Austin.
Uh-huh.
So I thought that was kind of a cool backstory. And the only reason I picked Adam instead of Austin was there were so many Austins.
Oh,
you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin
yeah.
Austin Idol, yeah. You know. So I was like, I got to pick a different name.
Yeah, I got to pick
a different name. So yeah, that was it.
It's funny when you first came over, my wife was like, how was the show? I was like, oh, it's great. You know, Brian Danielson came over and Adam Cole, and she's like, your mom doesn't really know. She knows wrestling, but doesn't watch. She's like,
yeah.
The announcer guy? I'm like, no, that's Michael Cole.
Yes.
So as we start to wind down, what were some of the big differences that you noticed in AEW when you first came into the locker room and when you first started visiting and even now that you're here as a full-time performer?
So aside from, again, because at NXT it was the same thing, everyone gets along, all that stuff, the biggest thing by far is the freedom. And what I mean by that, because again, even in NXT towards the end with promos and stuff, they would never write me a promo, but I had bullet points that they really wanted me to hit. Here, it's just like with promo wise or anything, it feels like there is a lot of potential to kind of say what you want to say in your promo and wrestle how you want to wrestle in your match. I mean, of course, we want to fit the story and things like that. It's not like you can go rogue or anything.
Right.
But a ton of freedom and a ton of options to kind of deliver what you want to deliver. And I think that's so cool because it does force you to try different things and learn different things. So that to me was the biggest thing, is the amount of freedom you have both on the microphone and in the ring.
What were your conversations with Tony like when you started deciding to come here?
Yeah. So they were great. I had met Tony a couple times previously at the New Year's Eve party or just said hello and things like that. But getting the chance to actually talk wrestling with him was really, really cool. When we spoke for 4 hours on the phone.
Wow.
And just about everything, about older matches and the excitement about coming here and everything. So, and again, this was only a couple days before the pay-per-view. So it happened all super last minute. But again, I've said this before about him, and his love and passion for pro wrestling is so contagious. I already love it so much, but hearing how excited he gets is so, so cool. You can tell in every sense of the word, his heart and soul is completely in this thing. Mm-hmm. So it's cool. He's a great guy.
So you decided to come here only days before the pay-per-view?
Days before. Yeah.
Was that to the wire?
Yeah. It was close because my contract had just expired very recently. It was like a week and a half maybe before, or I think so. It was very, very quick. So I couldn't even really talk to Tony until then.
Yeah, no tampering rules,
exactly,
or all that sort of stuff.
So
yeah,
that's why the decision happened, so last minute.
Because your contract ended and then the pay-per-view was right after that. Yeah.
Right, exactly. So I couldn't have a discussion if I wanted to.
Yeah.
So to have that discussion with him and then make the decision and just think that a few days later or whatever I would be at All Out was pretty cool. It all happened so fast, so, so fast.
How did you break it to WWE that you weren't coming back, and who did you tell?
Yeah, so I told Hunter and Sean, and both of them could not have been more supportive. Like it was awesome. Especially, I had a really, really long conversation with Sean, and of course, he wishes there could be a world where me and him could still see each other a lot and talk and work together and stuff. But he wants me to be as happy as possible, be as successful as possible. And he could tell how excited I was to come here. And I had his support 100%. And then Hunter, again, could not have been cooler, more understanding, appreciative of the 4 years that we've worked together. So I'm lucky the relationship I formed with those guys.
Was Hunter, I mean, obviously is probably a rhetorical question, but was he pushing to get you into the main roster?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Because we never really had a discussion of if he was saying, you know, yeah, I'm doing everything in my power to get you to Raw and SmackDown. He was very supportive of me and in a lot of ways protective of me. Mm-hmm. Like he really believed in what I brought to the table, both in the ring and on the mic. And then he really was happy with kind of the vibe that I gave in the locker room. I'm an annoyingly optimistic, positive person, but yeah. That's important for, you know, locker rooms to have a couple of them. So
a couple of them.
Yeah. So he was always someone that just really believed in me. So whether that be at NXT or Raw or SmackDown, he was with me all the way.
Well, I would assume that he feels protective of you as well because you did such a great job. Like
right.
You're one of his core guys that brought NXT to its heights.
Yeah, yeah, and really through and through believed in my time there that we were going to do everything in our power to make NXT as big as possible. He knew how much I loved the brand and what the brand stood for, and he saw how passionate I was, and I know how passionate he is. So, yeah, he was great.
Must be frustrating for him to see, and of course he's a company guy, but it must be kind of in the back of his mind frustrating to kind of see the NXT 2.0 and knowing what it was and now what it is, and I just feel that he's like, maybe he's totally into it, but
right. I'd be curious as well to kind of see how he felt, but because I know through and through. God, he would eat, sleep, and breathe NXT. He loved NXT.
He created it.
He did. He did.
You know?
Yeah.
He took it from Florida Championship, whatever it was called down there, to the whole modern-day PC and everything included in it, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, it'll be interesting these next couple months to kind of see how everything unfolds and how everything goes down there for sure.
Who are you looking to work with in AEW now? I mean, possibilities are endless. I was saying right. earlier to somebody that there's literally now with you three guys coming in, you could take the top 15 or 20 guys and we all have 20 main event matches that we could do. So there's like 400 main events that we can have
it's
over the
crazy.
Next 3 or 4 years just right off the bat.
Exactly. Exactly. So as far as the younger guys go, guys like Jungle Boy, MJF, Darby Allin, you know, you've said it, others have said it. They're just the future of wrestling. They're doing just such a tremendous job. And then as far as, you know, everyone else, not just saying this because you're sitting here, but you absolutely are someone that I really, really hope when I get to work with someday.
Yeah.
Again, I don't know if people know this, but the Adam Cole Bebe is very much influenced by Chris Jericho.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So
really?
When you used to stand on someone and go, come on, baby, I was like, oh, that's great. And then the other person who was involved was Joey Matthews or Joey Mercury.
Yeah.
I saw him at an independent show. And at one point, he was just walking around and he would throw his fists in the air and he would go, Joey Matthews, Joey Matthews. And I was like, that's so smart for anyone who's like not really a wrestling fan. Right. The one name they're going to remember is Joey Matthews. So I kind of combined the two, but again, you've influenced so many different careers, and now the chance of getting to step in there with you would be really cool. CM Punk is another one who really, really influenced me. He kind of helped me discover independent wrestling, and he was such a great interview and stuff like that. I'd love to work with Brian again. Like you had said, there are so many different choices. I couldn't name them all.
It's so ridiculous, like the embarrassment of riches that we have.
Right.
And it really is because at first, too, when the Punk comes in and then it was only a few weeks later that you come in and Brian comes in the same night. And I was almost like, is that too much at once? But then I realized Tony's mindset is like, we're throwing everything out there. Like, this is we are momentum. Why wait? You know?
Yeah. It's so funny that you say that because when it was talked about with me and Brian debuting in the same night. I could understand why someone would be like, oh, is one debut going to step on the other debut, which I didn't feel that way at all. Again, for the sake of the show, people are talking about that as the greatest or one of the greatest wrestling pay-per-views of all time. The card top to bottom with those crazy surprises.
With the finish of you two guys coming out. And the thing is, and I think I've said this before, but the original plan in Rochester, March 18th, 2020, because it was going to be, we did Salt Lake City, then it was going to be Rochester, then the next week was going to be the Blood and Guts in Prudential where we were last week, where you made your debut.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
And we were going to do a double introduction that night in Rochester, because it was, everyone thought that Matt Hardy was the leader of the Dark Order and we were going to introduce Brody as the leader first.
Yes.
Then later on at the end of the night, Matt Hardy was going to come out to join the Elite because Nick Jackson had a new baby.
Yeah.
So we were going to have Brody come out. It's like, oh my gosh. And then Matt come out later. Oh my gosh, the greatest night. So we never got to do that because of the way things with the lockdown and stuff. So it was good to do the double at the pay-per-view.
Absolutely. Yeah. The getting to be involved in something like that was so cool with the, again, because you could feel in the building that night. Fortunately, they were excited I was there. And then as it was finishing, they're like, no way someone else is going to come out, right? But what if someone does?
Yeah.
What if someone does? And then when it happened, it was just, what a night.
One last thing about the Come On Baby. That came from a guy called Fuyuki, who was the leader of the Fuyuki Goon, which was the evil heel team that was me, Jado, Gato, and Fuyuki.
Yeah.
So I've known Gato and Jado and Gato for 27 years at this point. 28 years, oh my gosh. And he used to do that for Yuki, and he would put his foot on the guy's chest and he'd do like the crab muscle pose and yell something in Japanese. So when I finished up in Japan and came to the States, I did that, but I had nothing in Japanese to say. So I would just go, come on, baby.
Yeah.
And then it was like, come on, baby. So there you go.
There it is.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. Huge influence. Huge influence.
So last question for you. What is your favorite match that you ever had? Or one that stands out, or a few that stand out.
Yeah. Well, I think my favorite one does involve Kyle O'Reilly, and it was in 2012. It was in the Hammerstein Ballroom. Mm. And why
Ring
this?
Of Honor?
Yeah, for Ring of Honor. And why this one was so special is we had just been there for a few years at this point, maybe 2 years, and we weren't really established yet. Like, people respected us, but we weren't over by any means. And we were in a thing called a hybrid fighting rules match, which was like this strange MMA influenced match that the New York fans were just not ready to like. They did not want to like it. They were being patient with us because they did respect us. But again, we weren't over by any means. And they were not into this thing, sitting on their hands, kind of sarcastically yelling. This is on iPay-per-view, so me and Kyle are destroyed. And Kyle accidentally punches me in the lip, where I could have completely separated my lip, where you could see through to my tooth.
Oh.
So much blood everywhere. And then the crowd started standing up.
Oh, wow.
And looking at it. And then there was a point where we ended up changing the whole finishing sequence of the match to more like accentuate the blood.
You changed it on the fly?
Yeah. And there was a point where, you know, I think Kyle had hit me with something and he was walking over to get me, and I sat up and I screamed. And blood squirted from my mouth onto his chest.
Oh.
And Kyle's looking all shocked, and the crowd was just so into it. And that match changed my career within Ring of Honor, because at that point they finally accept. Before I was just the pretty boy,
right,
who was, you know, a little bit athletic, and that was that. But when that happened, I had like an edge to me. And again, it changed my entire career and Kyle's too. So I think that one is my favorite, because they didn't want to like it.
Yeah.
Like, I love the idea that they were like, whatever. And then the last, you know, 8 minutes of that match, they were, oh man, this is the best match on the show. So,
see, that's great too, because you had to adapt to what happened.
Right.
Which is what wrestling's all about. And that's kind of what we're talking about. Like, you don't have to worry about, well, we called this whole match and here's what the producer told the cameraman. Like, fuck all that. Now there's some blood involved. Let's change the match completely and get this thing over. And that I can see that being like why you would really appreciate that.
Yeah. And again, you know, being so close with Kyle and us sharing that together was so cool. And really, because I hadn't been wrestling, I'd been wrestling maybe 4 or 5 years at that point. So it is scary at that point to be able to go, okay, we have to adapt and we have to.
Are we allowed to do this?
Right. But the cool thing was, is because I was bleeding so much, I almost had that, no, I don't care, we're changing it. So it was like that, we're going to make it happen no matter what, because I was in such a different state from all the blood. But yeah, that one will always be really special to me.
Well, when the elite turns on you, which I'm sure they will at some point, those rat bastards, you never know. There may be a reunion at some point. It'd be good to have some of those guys come over here, too.
Oh, it'd be great to have them here. But make an even bigger elite. I like that idea.
Even better. Yeah. Well, it's great to have you here, too, man. Congratulations. And I'm excited to see what you do here in AEW. It's been awesome so far.
Thanks, Chris. I'm stoked to be here, too. I appreciate it.